Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.
Hello and welcome to Engage for Success Radio and show number 530 in our weekly series. Engage for Success is the not-for-profit movement and the UK's leading voice on the topic of employee engagement. We're out there raising awareness and running events through our area networks around the country. And our topic and sector-specific thought and action groups are developing research, publishing case studies, and shining a light on all the great practice. Now, you can visit engagefor success.org to learn more and sign up for our weekly newsletter so you never miss out on any of our great free resources, events, and updates. And I'm Andy Gorham, your host for today's show and founder of BizJuicer, an employee engagement, retention, and culture change consultancy that helps businesses become stickier from the inside out. Now then, today I am thrilled to have Jeff Klubeck, author of The Integrity Game, join me to explore how the principles of his book can revolutionize the way leaders engage with their teams and bring support and resilience to both parties. In The Integrity Game, Jeff presents a compelling 10-point model that serves as a roadmap for personal and professional integrity. And he believes these principles are crucial for leaders who aim to deeply engage with their teams and bring about real accountability. And with Jeff's help, I hope we'll discuss how these 10 points can guide leaders in creating a work environment where engagement isn't just a buzzword, but a lived experience. So, if playing and winning the integrity game sounds interesting, stay tuned as I think this is going to be an enlightening conversation for anyone looking to elevate their performance and that of their teams. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm all of a sudden, when I was listening to the introduction, I felt like I was a listener rather than the guest. I got drawn in. Thank you. That was wonderful.
Well, let me just say, you are the guest, my friend. That's we need you. We need you on this show.
Okay. I'll put the other hat back on, but I want you to know I can't wait to listen to this episode. It sounds great.
Well, listen, my friend, I am dead excited to get stuck into hearing more about and making a stronger connection with the integrity game and its kind of link and effect on engagement and performance. But before I get all excited and get into that, do me a favor, my friend. Why don't you just share a bit of your background with us and tell us what you're focused on today, please?
Well, every day, not just today, but every day I'm focused on my family. What's going on here under my roof at home? I'm married to Marianne. She's been my love of my life since I was 19 years old. We have 3 kids. We've got 2 dogs. My wife is corporate. She's out of town right now, so I'm hyper-focused on all of my responsibilities around the home. But I wake up every day and I figure out, people say, Jeff, what do you do for a living? I wake up every day and I figure out how I'm going to deserve my wife and kids. I feel like I'm the luck. It's not easy, right? Nothing is, but I feel like I'm like the luckiest dude on the planet. And so next thing I know, I'm out of bed helping people one way or another. By way of background beyond that, I've got a master's in communication. I'm now unretired as an adjunct professor or lecturer at the college level teaching communication courses. So that's one of my competitive advantages in personal professional growth is the master's in comm and all the time in the classroom and teaching public speaking, getting people past the fear, which transfers into what we do as leaders in personal professional growth, the mindset piece in addition to everything else. And, spent some time as a headhunter recruiter, sports fan. I love music and I'm a jovial fellow. I grew up in the era where like cable TV like hit the scene and you got to get HBO and Showtime and Cinemax and watch all these stand-up comedians like Robin Williams and so many others. And so that's like a big influence for my teaching style. My communication style is to lead with humor and joviality. And, that's a little bit about me.
You have a lovely spirit about you, Jeff. And the whole communication thing now, you say that makes complete sense to me looking at the integrity game and how you've written it and the sports fan thing. So look, before we get into the lessons that we can take from the book, and I really, really want to do that, I think just connecting to those things, I think what is interesting is how you've written this book, because you've written it in, I guess, the proper word would be in a parable form. And it takes, I guess the book takes its lead from this conversation between a baseball dad and a hot dog salesman, and they're having a chat. So why use that form, that metaphor? What is it about that really spoke to you and allowed you to tell your story? And what's the message you want to convey with that?
Wow, how much time do we have? This is
not enough for you and I, I'm sure.
You know, yeah, and I don't say that to be funny, but I want to seriously. There's so much why to it all. It's nothing. Everything's multi-determined. First of all, and certainly how I led to. So let me just lay a couple on the table, and I'll try to go quick. Number one, I wrote the book while I was in mourning over the loss of my parents, who passed 3 weeks apart in September of 2020 during pre-vax COVID. And a month before that, I was asked, I actually recorded a virtual keynote for the Specialty Advertising Association of California. When months earlier, when they had asked for a list of potential topics, I was bored with the usual suspects list, you know, like, you know, goal setting and time management. And so like usual suspects, right? You said like, there's noise in the marketplace. So I threw the integrity game on there just to make the list look different. And then they chose it. they chose. So I had this model in my head, and then I developed it into the keynote. The 10-point model crystallized, and I delivered this keynote in a hotel room in pre-vax COVID, virtual. And they replayed the video for the conference. And then a month later, I lost my dad, and then 3 weeks later, lost my mom. And so I wrote, I'm like, wow, this is a good keynote, 10-point model. If I put an intro and a conclusion on this, I got the 12 chapters. Let's create a parable and take some characters through this 10-point journey. And you referenced the hot dog salesperson. Well, by the end of the book, the guy's not selling hot dogs anymore. Mm-hmm. And so in my career, I've learned about storytelling and the power of a parable. There's great books like Who Moved My Cheese and The E-Myth Revisited by Michael Gerber. The first half of that book is great with Sarah, the pie shop owner. And so so another reason for it all is we're talking about accountability, and accountability is always going to feel like an attack when we're not ready to be 100% responsible for our behavior. So back to the same reason that I would use humor in a classroom to disarm learners, I'm using the parable in the book to disarm readers. And when we're looking at a season ticket holder and we're looking at a hot dog vendor and a cotton candy salesperson and a rookie who just made the team, right? Because the season ticket holder is father of the rookie. So there's also memoir in the book, right? Obviously, the season ticket holder is based on qualities of myself. The rookie who made the team is based on my son, and who's a freshman at San Diego State University on scholarship playing baseball right now. But 2 years ago, I didn't know. And 3 years ago when I was writing the book, I didn't know that he'd be where he is now. So there's self-fulfilling prophecy in there. But the cotton candy person, she's infused with qualities of my daughter. And the hot dog vendor has a little bit of all of us. I hope we can all relate to the hot dog vendor. And at the end of the book, there's a hero figure who is carrying qualities of my youngest son and the dedications to my wife. And it was therapy for me mourning the loss of my parents. But I thought, you know what, I'm gonna string the pearls. I'm gonna crystallize my life's work. I'm going to mourn my parents. I'm going to memorialize my love for my family. I'm going to, you know, introduce a model into the marketplace, and I'm gonna establish competitive advantage because nobody's talking about integrity the way I am. And that's just a handful of why. There's more to it, but thanks for asking that easy question to get us started.
Listen. I think this is one of the things, and I understand why people connect to you, because you have a way of drawing people in and telling a story. Firstly, I have to say I'm very sorry for your loss, Jeff. But what a great
thank you. But to lean on humor again, at least, you know, BOGO, right? You know, like instead of buy one get one free, I bury one get one. You know, I just got to take care of both at the same time. So they're together. It's so romantic, man. They're together. They were only spent 3 weeks of their, you know, adult lives together on apart, you know, after 54 years. So I'm grateful and thank you for the condolence, but everybody's better off right now. And I love
okay.
That.
Well, that's great. I mean, before we start getting into how some of these 10 points relate, I just want to pick up on this accountability thing, because there's a strong theme of accountability coming through from what I have read. And I want to ask you this question. I hope it sounds okay, but why accountability? What's the issue with accountability that you want to address with this book?
Well, first of all, I forget exactly who it was, but thanks to them, and they're brilliant for saying so. Somebody once told me that the work that we're really passionate about putting into the world is the work that we really want and need for ourselves. So if I can lead with a dose of vulnerability, clearly I've either benefited from accountability or want more in my life. I want more integrity in my life. I'm not just telling the world what they need to do. No way. You know, I'm inviting the world on my journey to be a better person, better father, better husband, better leader, better professor, better whatever I need to do, right? My spiritual growth and my path. And yeah, so there's that, right? Accountability. When I learned what accountability was, just beyond an ability to pronounce it as a word. Because, you know, I always get to lean on some humor, right? Accountability, like integrity, right? It's one of these words like, I don't know, parenting or driving, where we all think ourselves to be really good, but everybody else sucks.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Is it, right? So yeah. Normally when we talk about accountability, we talk about integrity, we're using those words when we're judging somebody else of needing more, not having enough, violating the norms, right? The truth of the matter is, if we're willing to be vulnerable, we're willing to be honest with ourselves, we're all out of integrity. We all need more, like, hello. So the sooner we get to work on our own side of the street, the less we're concerned about, you know, the less we bother ourselves with trying to clean up other people's streets. We'll help people clean up their own street, but I'm not going to like criticize your side of the street when mine's still got, you know, papers blowing around all over the place. Right. So it's just, I'm very well aware of the achievements, the growth that has come to me when I've been willing to be held accountable. Most people will consider accountability an attack when they're not ready to be responsible for their behavior. Most people will avoid the responsibility of declaring what they want. They want other people to tell them what to do just so they can complain about it. And I can get really real about it. And you talked about accountability early in the intro. But what I want, what I really want, like imagine if accountability was non-threatening. What if? Mm. What if accountability was non-threatening? What if we all wanted to be counted? What if we all willed ourselves into being observed and counted and held to account? And what if we gave permission to the world to hold up a mirror in front of us at all times? So we'd have to know what we wanted, right? So
yeah.
Like, I would have to know what I really want in order to want to be held accountable to going to get that. So that's what the integrity game is trying to do, is create a 10-point model, 10 sets of questions, that if we're willing to try to answer those questions, we might be closer to what we want to be held accountable for, accountable to. And then leaders, if they take the time to get to know what people's answers are and then have the same answers for their teams or the same answers for their organization, you got to find the point of integration, right? In all institutions, and I'll wrap up this phase of comment here. Every institution, whether it's Star Wars and you got the Jedis and the Siths, or whether it's government and you got the red and the blue and the right wing and the left wing, or whether it's Little League baseball, or I don't care what the institution is, there's a subset of the population of the institution, subset of the members that are there to forward the mission and the vision and the values of the institution. They know, hey, if I give myself to the institution to do what the institution needs, I'll get whatever I'm here for. Other people are there to get all of the resources from the institution for themselves. And that's the constant tension. And so that's why things are that tension is the first out of integrity, and everything ripples from there. So the real leaders, the progressive organizations, what they're going to do is they're going to find the point of integration where, hey, guess what? I know what you want. And you don't have to be political or manipulative or out of integrity to get it. Let me show you where what you want integrates with what the team and the organization wants. Here it is. Let's go together. I know what you want. I'm going to take the time to find out what you want. And you don't have to be out of integrity to get it. And that's where we're going to make a difference. That's where we're going to have people engaged and showing up early and staying late and on and on and on. The ripple effect, if accountability is non-threatening. I'm going to pause there and let you enter. I can keep going, Andy. You got me wound
hey,
up.
Hey, I'm happy for you to keep going, my friend. People would be far more interested listening to you than me. I think what you say is fascinating. And I think, you know, to have those really good, honest conversations that give real answers to these 10 question sets, that's where the trust thing comes in, right? The stronger the trust bond between the leader, the team, whoever, the more real those answers are going to be. And I think when I look at that, the 10 points that come out, and look, we have a 30-minute episode. We don't have time to go through all 10 of these in the detail that we would like to, but
no.
If you're happy, if I could just pick out a couple for us to kind of explore a wee bit. One of the 10 points that I really, really, really enjoy, really love, is the piece around recognizing and utilizing your gifts as a component of living with integrity. And it just got me to thinking that's going to be easier for some people, right, to recognize their gifts than others. What do you say to someone in all of your experience? What do you say to someone who struggles to identify their gifts?
Well, play the integrity game. It'll get easier. You know, if anybody's struggling with any answers to their own questions about any aspect of their life, let's play a game, you know, gamify it. And let's take a deep breath, or let's talk to a coach, you know, to have a soundboard, have somebody that can ask good questions and pull things out, and et cetera. So it's not scary. It's not scary. And the reason people are struggling is because as soon as you have an answer, now you can be held accountable. So they're not afraid. They just say they're afraid in order to avoid the work, right? Same thing with public speaking. You know, people aren't afraid of public speaking. They're afraid of the work to prepare for public speaking. So they say, I'm afraid to get out of doing the work. Right? Public speaking is no different than anything else. If you prepare well, you'll do well. So back to gifts. Okay. First of all, let's go up to a high level and let's just shine a light on the set of questions around gifts, right? Because each point on the 10-point model in the integrity game can be viewed as a question set, 10 sets of questions. So the set of questions labeled that I lay use gifts, right? First of all, what's your mindset around giving and receiving? If I'm in coaching with somebody, or if somebody's coaching with you, if I'm doing integrity game coaching with somebody and helping a team or a high performance or a C-level exec or whatever through this, I want to know, what's your mindset around giving? What do you believe about giving? Do you believe that you only give a little, that you only give to certain places, that you never give, keep it all to yourself? Like, what's your vibration around giving, first of all? Second of all, what's your vibration around receiving? I can tell you quite honestly that I had a hard time, and probably still do, but I'm better at it now. But I had a hard time receiving anything most of my life, because all it did was remind me of what I didn't have growing up. And so anybody who would want to do something for me, it would just trigger scarcity that I grew up with. So out of false and foolish pride of no, I got it. And that's silly, right? So what's the mindset around giving and receiving? What's the vibration around giving and receiving? That's number one. Then we can get into what counts as a gift. And I would encourage everybody to understand that it's like, I'm making up this phraseology. Are you ready, Andy? Anything other than the average. Anything other than the average. Even rock bottom, even the you know what I'm saying? The slap in the face moment, or some rock bottom, or some hard reality. What a gift. What a thing to bounce back from, right? Wake up calls are gifts. So anything above or below average is a gift to somebody, somehow, some way, if we have opened our mind to recognizing them and understanding how to apply, utilize, integrate our gifts, right? So one is like, what's your vibration on giving and receiving? Two, what counts as a gift? What's your recognition level of all the gifts that are surrounding us at all times? Then we can break it down. This is my favorite part. We get closer to ground level. God-given. Like every day above ground, right? Like the gift of life. What were you born with? Your DNA, Shaquille O'Neal, you know, right? He didn't choose 7 feet. That was a gift, baby. You know what I'm saying? Right? Like that. Okay. So God given. And then like, I can tell you when I was in school and I was in college, back to the scarcity thing, my parents, I love them. God bless my parents, right? Rest in peace. But they didn't have a lot of money. And I thought I was going to have to drop out of school because they couldn't pay for tuition in my fourth semester, I went to my bosses on campus and I said, hey, look for a replacement for me because I'm not going to be able to enroll. And the next day they took me to lunch and said, number one, we don't want to lose you. Number two, if you drop out, it'll be hard to get back in. This is a career. This is a huge moment in your life. So can we lend you money to stay in school part-time? You'll pay us back $100 a month, but just don't drop out of school no matter what. And then bonus, you know, please keep working for us so we know that you can pay us back out of your monthly paycheck. You're like, what? That's man-made. That's where a human being comes and gifts you, like wants to gift you, right? And the emotional side of the story was when my mom was crying because she didn't have the money. And somehow, some way, I was gifted again by something above that taught me right there in the moment. I was 19 years old and I told mom, I said, mom, your job right now isn't to be sad that you don't have the money. Your job is to be proud that you raised somebody that other people want to invest in.
Nice.
And that's something that I've tried to live up to, you know, all my life. And you can hear my emotion, right? And then, you know, what a bummer if you've got this God-given and you got these man-made. But what about self-generated? What am I doing for myself? I went and I finished my degree and I got a master's degree. So I integrated man-made, God-given, self-generated, right? That's, you know, I'm trying to live an integrated life, right? So what am I doing for myself? Am I suffocating my gifts? Am I squashing my gifts? Am I running from my gifts? Or am I investing in my gifts? Or am I optimizing my gifts? Am I sharing my gifts? Am I willing to have the growing pains of you know, actualizing? Or have I decided what I want to be gifted in if I wasn't starting from a gifted place, right? There's things that I'm doing now that I used to be really bad at. And because I made a decision that I wanted to be gifted. I wanted to be different than the average in a certain area. So these are the question sets. And then what it translates to from a marketing perspective or a high performance team or a business culture or a high potential, you know, professional inside of an org is what's your competitive advantage?
Yeah.
Why did you want me on your show instead of somebody else?
Yeah.
You know, why are people listening to this episode instead? Why are they buying my book? Why do they hire you, raise you, promote you, want to do business with you, want to hang out with you, right? Why do people want me on their podcast, on and on and on, versus anybody else that they could? So what do I do better than everybody else that does the same things I do? And then of all the things that I do, or of all the people that do what I do, what do I do that none of them do? And playing the integrity game is certainly one of them. And there's other competitive advantages that I seek as I promote my business to get my messages out there. But what a great question, this gifts thing. I was like sitting there on the edge of my seat going, oh, God, which of the 10 is he going to choose? Am I ready? How's that? How's that for gifts?
That's great. I said we'd have no shot at all at getting 10 in, and we've got one. And I'm desperate to ask another one. before we run out of time, because I think this particularly links so strongly to engagement and culture work at its pure foundation. And right back at the beginning of the model, you talk about purpose and meaning at the foundation of everything, right? And this has been, I think, a topic for the last decade or so, whatever it might be. But still today, I think people live in different camps, and there are still people who do not believe the power of purpose and meaning. And I don't know, why do you think there are still groups of people who fail to engage with or really get to grips with identifying their purpose?
There's a lot of reasons. First of all, hats off to Simon Sinek and others that popularized the concept of start with why. I mean, you know, the value of purpose has been around for quite a long time, but hats off to Simon Sinek, who popularized start with why, and at least got this conversation going where people may still be falling short or be polarized, but, you know, like, credit where credit is due. And if I can do for integrity what he did for start with why, I would be a happy kid.
Very happy man.
Yeah, very happy man. So if I, you know, I follow in those footsteps. So purpose just is one point on my model. It's like the first point that I discuss when I'm presenting this in keynote or in workshop or facilitations or retreats or C-level, you know, events, et cetera. And then to your question, why do people struggle with this, or what's the rub, or what can I add to this conversation that hasn't been said already? Look, when I raise my hand and I ask the crowd in the keynote, how many of you have integrity, 100% of the room will raise their hand. But if I said, all right, now with your other hand, write down your purpose and send it forward. Write down on a piece of paper what your purpose is and send it forward. A very small percentage of the room would be able to execute that right away.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. And so one of the things I like to say is I don't like to build a mansion on top of quicksand. Right. And so everything else you're doing, right, is a mansion on top of quicksand if it's not sitting on top of that solid concrete foundation of why. Moreover, now we can get into other aspects of it, right? Now, this comes a little bit from public speaking. When I'm teaching public speaking, we know that there's three purposes: entertain, inform, or persuade. So if there's 1,000 decisions I need to make when I'm writing my speech and practicing my speech and deciding what stories to include in my speech or what visuals to use in my speech or when to be audience interactive in my speech, of all the decisions I have to make about my talk, my presentation, if I don't know the purpose, if I don't know if I'm entertaining, informing, or persuading, I'm having a hard time making every one of those decisions. But as soon as I declare the purpose, now I have an easier, and it's easy. Oh, what's my purpose? Okay, then this is the right decision. So a lot of people are making decisions. They're being blown around like a feather in the wind. They're pawns in other people's chess games. They're people pleasing. They're yes manning. They're passing buck. They're path of least resistance thing. They're keeping up with Jonesing. Like, there's all these reasons for decision making that aren't tethered to purpose. So anything out of integrity invites everything else to be out of integrity. Okay. Now, what prevents people from deciding, declaring their purpose? Well, the accountability. once you answer the big question, now we can say, well, what the hell are you doing? How does that behavior right there integrate with your purpose? Oh, well, it doesn't. Yeah. Okay, well, don't get mad at me. I'm just trying to help you achieve your purpose. So people will avoid being held accountable to, you understand what I'm getting at. The other thing is, like, people say things like, oh, I need to find my purpose. I need to discover my purpose, right? I'm in search of my purpose. So a lot of times when people are talking about purpose, they build in language that presupposes, or how should I say this, pre-declares, that it's missing. It's like you're on the other side of the world somewhere. I don't want to tell people, like, turn around in a circle 360 degrees, and I use, imagine there's 360 baseballs surrounding you. Turn around in a circle. Do you see them all, 360 baseballs? Yeah? Pick one. As soon as you touch it, it's your purpose. Right? What about the other 359? Ah, that's another thing that keeps people from choosing a purpose, is they're afraid of missing out on something bigger, something better. Right? Which means they aren't patient enough to try something on the way. They don't understand the path to better, bigger, right? And so what's interesting is cart before the horse, and, it's like done is better than perfect, but a lot of people are looking for the perfect thing, which is an impossibility, so they never find it, so they stay in mediocrity. So willingness to be vulnerable, willingness to take chances, willingness to discover, willingness to, and I don't even know who came up with this. I literally am a nonviolent person, but I will get into a fist fight with whoever came up with the saying trial and error. Are you kidding me? That's why everybody wants to avoid it. Call it trial and success, or trial and learning, or trial and growth, or trial and progress. Like, I will literally fist fight with whoever came up with that saying. I mean, it's killing us. So one of the things I want to do, and thanks for laughing, man. I appreciate you so much. But I'm trying to change the game. The language that we use is evidence of the judgmental vibration we have for these things. We just want to judge everybody else. We don't want to do our own work. But what's the meaning of life? What's the purpose of life at all? Do you have any answers for that? Okay, good. What's the meaning of your life? And I'll stop by saying this. I don't care if your purpose tomorrow is different than your purpose today. What the integrity game cares about, and with me as your coach, is every day without a purpose. So let's make sure we know what the purpose is today. Let's get as far as we can. And if you decide you want to change tomorrow, I'll support you there too.
I'm sitting here just grinning, laughing at the list of questions I've got nowhere near during this conversation, Jeff. It's been wonderful. It's been wonderful to listen to you. I genuinely hope this isn't my last conversation with you, because there is so much more stuff that we could get into. I would just like to say, unbelievably, that is about all we have time for today. So before I say goodbye to Jeff, don't forget to visit engageforsuccess.org and check out all the show notes and all the fab free engagement resources. And you can download shows just like this, any of the shows, entirely at your leisure. Jeff, blimey. Thank you so much for sharing so little and yet so much of the Integrity Game with us today. If people want to find out a bit more about you and the book, where can they go, my friend?
I'm easy to find online. Just do a Google search for me and you'll find me.
Okay, buddy. Listen, we'll be back again at the same time next week. I'm Andy Gorham, and thanks for listening to Engage for Success Radio.
Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.